Reading from The Pirates by George MacDonald Fraser. Chapter the 18th. We have it on the authority of Defoe, and who could doubt Desperate Dan for a moment, that Anne Bonny once observed irritably of a lover, as he was dragged out to the gallows at dawn, that if he had fought like a man, he need not have been hanged like a dog. Neat and pithy, it must have cheered him up no end. But the real significance of her remark at such a time has hitherto been overlooked by scholars, the dumb clucks. Not any more, though. We've spotted it. Plainly, she was not at her best first thing in the morning. This is borne out by her reaction on waking up, nude, cold, with coated tongue, and a head like a burst cushion, to find herself lying on a mattress ripped to shreds, and her room in wild disorder. Her first bleary, ecstatic thought was, "Gad, that new slave is something else." And then she realized that the Madagascar cross was gone, and that the smooth, long rat must have slipped giggle juice in her loving cup. Her bliss evaporated in frothing rage, not only robbed then, but scorned. Small wonder that Onslow, bringing prunes and poached eggs in response to her bellowed oaths, should have tottered out again with the breakfast tray wrapped round his head, and the impression that her instant requirements were a pack of hounds, a horsewhip, and a cauldron of hot tar in the back yard. Gripping her skull with both hands, to prevent its flying open, and mouthing rich sea oaths, the unhappy redhead became aware of a distant clamour, and reeled to the window. Focusing with difficulty, she beheld on the sunlit reach beyond the trees three tall ships which her experienced but glassy eye recognized as the Laughing Sandbag, the Frantic Frog, and, gad's anchors, the Plymouth Corporation's Revenge under jury rig. The big idiot was home, rot him! And then she realized that the garden was a swarm with pirates, trampling her croquet lawn and clock golf layout, invading the barbecue pit, and close-packed and noisy mob round the swimming pool. There was Calico himself, with Bilbo and Firebeard and the Snail Guzzler, all seated on barrels round the deep end, regarding two pinioned figures who stood on the diving boards, the nooses round their necks attached to the top platform. She started, reached for the brass-mounted telescope on her makeup tray, and homed in. A likely big rascal with black curls and pencil moustache, rather scrumptious in a dirty-looking way, and the other, as the splendid Greek god profile and lithe figure swam into her lens, and could not repress a cry of, "Gotcha, you bastard!" And she was about to lean forth, and in a contralto which had hailed the foretop ere now, instruct them to hold him down till she got at him, and then she bethought, like anything. If she denounced him for cross-snitching slave, last night's doings would be thoroughly aired, ripped mattresses goggled at, lewd conclusions drawn, and the scum of the sea would cough delicately behind horny hands and give each other knowing looks. "Oh-ho," they would murmur, "at it again, is she?" Not that she gave a hoot, normally. Everyone knew, and darling Calico had always been broad-minded, provided she was discreet. Yes, but he might be just a teensy cross if her latest attempted infidelity was flaunted before the crews of three notoriously gossipy pirate vessels. She found herself recalling how he had beaten Blackbeard at Indian arm wrestling, and the thrilling night when he had flattened her iron-studded bedroom door with one blow of his fist, which had been holding her first husband at the time. No, it wouldn't be fair to embarrass dear Jack. Definitely not. She'd better just forget about the Madagascar cross. It hadn't really gone with any of her outfits, anyway, and she could always tell him it had gone foot in the South Sea Bubble or something. As to that gorgeous swine on the diving board who had passed her up, damn his impudence, and given her this monumental hangover, it was imperative that he should get his without delay and without telling any bedtime stories either. Pausing only to swallow a pint of rum and seltzer, shudder, stare in the mirror, shudder again, repair her makeup and fix her hair, Mistress Anne squeezed her way into a modish riding habit, turquoise nylon, donned a picture hat, plumed au mousquetaire, cursed the gremlins who were kicking holes in her cranial cavity, gulped 4 aspirins, summoned her chair, and sailed forth to enjoy the fun. Meanwhile, it was all go at the deep end. The little Welsh pirate was laying it on the line passionately, while our heroes, noosed and attentive, waited to hear their fate.
"I'm not saying you can't hang these 2 non-union individuals here. I'm just saying, look you, that if you hang 'em out of hand, it'll be a flagrant contravention of conference policy as democratically ratified by overwhelming block vote at the Port Royal Congress, innit?"
The tiny taffy brandished his rule-book, clause 2, subpara 5, specifically states that when captives, prisoners, and or hostages have survived the ordeal of dead man's chest, then further disciplinary action at shop-floor level can only be implemented after affirmative vote of the Executive Council, see?
In other words, you cannot hang 'em unless Council said so, and it don't matter a monkey's about your show of hands.
Cries of, "Cobblers! Stick it, the Welsh! And order, order!" were stilled as Calico Jack pounded his cutlass hilt. "The council accepts Brother Aneurin's motion."
"With a curse," bawled Firebeard, being awkward.
"That's an amendment,"
squealed the little Welshman.
"Accepted with a curse, then," growled Rackham. "So council of captains must pass formal vote o' doom. 'Tis all one. They swing in the end and sing merrily all, saha."
"Just keeping things regular-like," said Aneurin primly, while the pirates roared, "Huzzah! Tip 'em the black spot, captains!"
But now Mistress Bonnie's sedan had arrived, borne by stalwart blacks, and as she debussed and swayed oomphishly forward, the assembly gave her gallant greeting with stentorian wolf-whistles and cries of,
"Ho for Red Annie, messmates all!" and, "Hey, lady, you left your motor running,"
while she acknowledged with languid grind of hips. Rackham, not having seen her for months, bussed her fondly and set a barrel for her. Bilbo and Happy Dan made legs full courteously, and Firebeard lit his whisker crackers, exploding and reeking welcome. The little taffy offered her the minutes, which she waved aside.
"Taken as read, darlings," she drawled, "though one is unacquainted with these gentlemen."
She gestured limply at the prisoners, and introductions were hastily made by Rackham.
"Captain Ben Avery, R.N., rot him. Colonel Tom Blood, cashiered. Mistress Anne Bonny,"
she inclined her head. Avery bowed superbly in his bonds. If she pretended non-acquaintance, not for him to bandy a lady's name. And Blood, despite his pressing anxieties, could not help noting that here was a well-built piece of all right, whose green eyes ignored Avery, but warmed sleepily at Blood himself. She even murmured, "Colonel," in a way which spoke censored volumes.
No harm in making Avery realize he wasn't the only pebble on the beach, the handsome bastard, she thought spitefully. Not that much time would be left him for jealousy.
"These 2 be for the seesaw, after formal vote of council," explained Rackham. "As to the fashion by which they die..."
Mistress Anne stirred an eyebrow.
"No problem there, darling, surely. A slight nudge and let 'em dangle. We don't..."
she yawned elaborately, shooting a sidelong glance at Avery. "Want them making a lot of unnecessary noise, do we? Not before lunch." Cries of dismay arose from those who had been looking forward to slow fires, broken bottles, and bicycle bumps. Mistress Bonnie shrugged, but plucked doubtful lip, and Avery, his razor mind instantly hepped to her reasons for wanting him speedily dispatched, hastened to reassure her. He just oozed chivalry, our boy, and felt he owed her some amend for the state of her bedroom.
"Mr. Chairman," he baritoned mellifluously, "let me assure Madam, or should I say Mistress, that whatsoe'er form death takes, be it ne'er so lingering beastly, there shall be no untoward peep out of us."
"Is that right?" snarled the Colonel, but Mistress Anne was relieved.
"One is beholden, Captain," she purred. "Why then, darlings, let's fill up the pool with piranhas and slide the gentleman down the chute, why don't we?"
Whoops of cruel glee and demands that the local aquarium should be contacted greeted this proposal, but Rackham waved them aside and addressed the doomed pair. Blood sweating large amounts, Avery wearing his noose with elegant composure, as 'twere a la mode.
"Bullies," quo' Calico Jack, "ye go clean to your long home, you, Ben Avery, for that ye swore vengeance on this brotherhood, slew our mate Akbar, and wrested from our brethren Sheba and Bilbo 2 Madagascar crosses, knowing them to be hot ice, which doth make thee a receiver of stolen goods." Roars of delight from the pirates, who hadn't thought of that one. "You," Rackham turned to Blood, "have just been a bloody nuisance from the start. So, here the council demand thee both. Hast aught to say?" Blood could think of plenty, but gazing down on that evil, gloating company, he thought, "What's the point?" and contented himself with an extremely vulgar noise. Polite clapping greeted this spirited statement, and Blood's stock rose several points. Avery, meanwhile, was choosing words that would sting. He mustn't appear to be pleading with these blighters, or have them think he minded dying, but by Jove, he'd remind them how utterly lacking they were in sporting spirit and good form. Rotten thing to have to do, but if he didn't, no one else would. He coughed modestly. "I hate to bring this up, and I would have none think he owes aught to any," he remarked casually, "but I feel bound to point out that this council, which is about to vote us booties o' cement, would be 2 men short if someone hadn't saved their lives at Cartagena. That's all. Talk among yourselves if you like."
If his hands had been free, he'd have blown lightly on his nails.
"Nay, now, Cully!"
Bilbo was on his feet, all lean and sneering mockery.
"Thyself did say, in Lardo's pesky dungeon, that 'twas but a moment's truce, and then red war betwixt us, so did ye cancel the debt. Ha! Pull the other one, King's man!"
"Bloody cheek, by the powers!" howled Firebeard. "Saved my life, did he? And who carried thy mangy rat's carcass down them dungeon stairs, all tender loving-like, arter ye swooned at sight of blood, hey? Why, tear, scour, and riddle thee for rank poxy ingrate!"
He shook ham-like mottled fists.
"We'm square, you and me, and hast the brazen neck to urge—"
"Urge nothing," said Avery coldly. "Forget it. Sorry I spoke. Should have known better."
"You had to mention it, didn't you?"
Goliath the dwarf stumped forward in an indignant peg leg.
"Caw, that's rotten, that is, at a time like this and all, trying to make people feel uncomfy and miserable. Really rotten."
Murmurs of disgust rose from the pirates.
"D'ye hear, mates? 'Tis petty knave doth rake up old debts. Nay, what a slob! Anything to get sympathy. Typical, trust the navy. Shame on ye, Avery."
A faint glow mantled the captain's proud cheek. "Nothing of the sort. If conscience pricks, it's your own foul fault. It shouldn't have needed mentioning. No, I won't shut up, Blood. One either has one's code or one hasn't. Ha! What do I say? They're only a pack of pirates." The audience went berserk, swearing horribly and throwing cushions and programs at the indomitable figure on the diving board. Avery curled proud lip, and then Calico Jack flung up his arms for silence, a strange glint in his dark eye. "Is that so?" quoth he. "You think you're owed summat, huh?"
"Not in the least," clipped Avery. "But were I Firebeard or Bilbo, a perfectly ghastly notion, I agree, I fancy I should consult mine honour, if I had any."
Firebeard ran screaming in circles and kicked his barrel into the pool. Bilbo, pale neath his tan, glared hate. Rackham nodded at Avery.
"So, bully, back of pirates, is it?"
He swung to the mob.
"Mates, what be the first law of the Brotherhood?"
That shut them up. Calloused thumbs leafed surreptitiously through codes of conduct with uneasy glance and whisperous doubt.
Dirty and thought word indeed. The proletariat is the material weapon of philosophy, ah? Don't ask me. Where's that little Welsh git?
Rackham spat. I'll tell ye. It's fair's fair. So get the black spots out and let's get cracking.
Wow. The black spots. Here's a sensation by the powers.
And while our dynamic duo watched with bug-eyed panic and cool disdain, respectively, five ebony discs were laid on barrelhead before the pirate leaders.
Aha! Les petits blobs noirs,
giggled Happy Dan, and the tumult died as Rackham held up a disc to the prisoners.
Now, mark how a pack of pirates deal. Thus we dooms our enemies.
And he slapped the disc on the barrel. It couldn't have looked blacker.
But if any among the council hold that a debt or favor be due to a captive, then may he vote to let him live. Thus.
He flipped over the disc to show a reverse side of pure white.
Here be five of the council. Cap'n Bilbo, Cap'n Pugh, Cap'n Firebeard, Mistress Bonnie, and myself. Each shall vote in turn. Nay, patience, Brother Bilbo. All in due form, for our credit's sake. So let a brother stand by each captive, and if the vote go foul for them, let em swing on the instant.
Two hairy ruffians mounted the springboards and eagerly seized Blood and Avery, ready to launch them into fatal half-gainers when the time came. Rackham took his seat with Happy Dan and Firebeard on his right, and Bonnie and Bilbo on his left. Avery glanced down at them with scorn in every ruffle of his shirt, but no hope in his gallant interior. Happy Dan's eyes were alight with epicene hostility and pure barminess. Firebeard was resting his red-fuzzed knuckles on the ground and emitting coughing growls. Rackham's face was impassive, brown marble. Mistress Bonnie's full lips were curved in mocking smile, and Bilbo was guzzling snuff with wolfish eagerness. His boots were probably giving him jip, Avery reflected. All in all, not a happy sight for the boys. In fact, Blood had his eyes shut and was gurgling like a very old radiator. In the deathly hush, Rackham spoke.
Cap'n Pugh.
Qui, moi?
Happy Dan flourished beringed hand, and his buckled shoes tapped a vengeful rigadoon.
Ah, pour l'horloge sur la mur de l'école. Je n'aime pas this Avery, who have slew le pauvre petit Akbar, et le paddy méchant. Il play mauvais sur la plage, and transform ma fille grand bouche fantastique into un scrobber peroxide.
He flung down his spot, black side up.
A la lanterne. 1-0, chanted the pirates to the tune of Amazing Grace, and Rackham pounded his hilt again. Captain Firebeard.
They had to beat the giant about his shaggy ears to make him realize it was his turn, so disordered was he in his resentful wrath. He glared on the twain from piggy eyes.
"Belike," he bawled. "Look ye, I and ye see, I hate 'em both. They're honest men. Rip, tear, and hammer 'em," says I. "King's man and Mick alike."
He hurled his spot on the barrel so hard it split a stave, and there it lay, two black spots.
"Easy, easy," roared the pirates, and Rackham weighed his disk in his hand.
"I said from the first he was too good a man to lose, Long Ben, and if my comrade Sheba was here, I know how she'd cast her lot. So, for all the good it'll do ye," he laid his spot on the barrel, white side up, and Mistress Anne's green eyes narrowed, and she sighed a gentle sigh.
"La," thought she, "here's a turn-up. She and Calico Jack had voted the same ticket ever since she had placed her bloody adolescent thumbprint timidly beside his on the New Providence Manifesto telling Woods Rogers what to do with his royal pardon. Against that she burned with jilted fury against Avery, and he'd be safer silenced. On the other hand, he'd kept quiet so far, and could any red-blooded man-eater worth the name put the bee on a creature so gorgeously edible? The Irishman wasn't bad either, apart from being green in the face. Oh, let Bilbo do it. Darlings," she drawled, and smiled lazily on Blood, "you know one could never resist men with mustaches." The disk fell from her plump fingers, too black, too white. With Rathbonian snarl, Bilbo raised his disk, and from the pirate assembly burst a chant of, "Bilbo! Bilbo! Raw! Raw! Raw!" The ruffians gripping the prisoners prepared to heave. Goliath turned a cartwheel and snapped his fingers. Firebeard started striking matches in anticipation. Avery turned his best profile towards the audience. Blood wondered if chaps at Tyburn ever actually threw up. And Calico Jack Rackham, not leader of men for nothing, look ye, smiled grimly and waited. For Bilbo's lean fingers were fretting with his disk, and Bilbo's lean face shone with sweat, and Bilbo's black eyes burned. Had Avery been ahead on points that night at Lardo's palace? Nay, never. And yet might not men say he had been? What are the winks and nudges and snide questions or chat-shows hereafter? 'Twas pity, Cap'n Bilbo, thou never didst win decision o'er. Plague take it, what was the rascal's name? Avery? Nor no return bout, neither. Pray, sir, tell the viewers how that never came about. Odds pockets, he'd never live it down. Nay, more, if one aspired to gentle estate, as Bilbo did, and dreamed brave dreams of strolling arm in arm with a king's grace at Newmarket, and chocolate with equality at Locket's, and spake and dressed and suffered excruciating shoon and bespoke head-doilies to that end, could one, with such genteel ambitions, damn with a spot a fellow sword-master rot him? Aye, and a gentleman born, too. What would Avery do in his place? And yet Bilbo gnawed his disk in hesitation, laughed sneering laugh, and bared savage teeth as he took his revenge. Never so tall and rakish, he sauntered forward, took snuff, made play with lace kerchief, and grinned wickedly into Avery's calm gray eyes as he dropped his disk on the barrel head. "Now, prithee, Cap'n, tell me," he lisped, "who owes who?" It was white side up. 3-2 for the visitors, and no double-header today.
Black Bilbo tossed his snuffbox to Goliath, swung round on red lacquered heel, saluted the company, swept a bow to Mistress Anne, and strolled away, his bunions singing in triumph. After that, it ought to have been old pals' week. Let bygones be bygones and be damned with rum-sodden good fellowship among friendly enemies. But it wasn't. Once the verdict had sunk in and the two captives had been released, as brotherhood custom demanded, you might have expected backslapping and congratulations, hearty jests and much offering of pannikins and free advice about visas and galleon departures. Not a hope. The lower-deck pirates were thoroughly fed up at being cheated of their execution. It adds nothing to your enjoyment of buffet lunch to find that the man you'd hoped to see torn asunder by piranhas is standing next to you, wiring into salt beef in the basket and rum pims. And there were mutinous murmurs against the council, with dark hints that the old gang had been in long enough. It was time for new blood, preferably spilled, etc., etc., before the whole mob mooched off to the beach to get drunk and fall a-plotting. Which left only our principals to dispose of the alfresco buffet on Anne Bonny's croquet lawn, and the atmosphere was strained. There was none of that polite chit-chat of oaths and blasphemies, enlivened occasionally by sociable clash of steel and witty pistol-shot, which you normally got at a Shark Island picnic. Firebeard, infuriated at the verdict, had torn up a couple of trees before going off to sulk in the barbecue pit, barely picking at his roasted ox. Happy Dan, equally miffed, had suffered an attack of Liverpool accent and was lying down in a dim room. Bilbo, cock-a-hoop at handing Avery the perfect squelch, was ruffling it insufferably at the swimming pool, doing high dives in a fleering, provocative manner. Rackham brooded apart on the Brotherhood's woes and possible mutiny. Blood, still barely out of shock after his ordeal, flirted automatically with Mistress Bonny, who in turn smiled with mechanical languor, while seething inwardly because Avery hadn't so much as glanced in her direction. Damn him! And after she tipped him a white spot, too, the detestable, magnificent swine who'd spurned, robbed, and drugged her. Was she wondered, losing her marbles as well as her touch? And Avery, he was sicker than mud. To be spared, discarded almost, by a set of despised villains— to be patronized, dash it, by Bilbo, of all people, with his ghastly taste in steamkirks and cheap aftershave and phony Vauxhall accent. He'd have challenged the brute straight away, but how in decency can you challenge a bounder who has just saved your life? Besides, he was by no means certain that he could take Bilbo, rapier to rapier, and absolute though our Ben's courage was, he had his duty to think of. The British settlements to warn, vanity to rescue, Lardo to shove down the pipe, Vladimir to find, and what to do about the Brotherhood whom he'd vowed to destroy and who'd now morally disarmed him by not cutting his throat. Gosh, how troubles piled up! So he idled pensively on the putting green, abstractedly sinking 30-footers left-handed with one eye closed, and trying to ignore Bilbo, who was doing handstands on the top board in his lurex trunks. Had the party lasted another 20 minutes in this atmosphere, it would have been the ultimate social disaster, for in that time Firebeard would have drunk enough to emerge from the barbecue pit seeking sorrow. Happy Dan would have committed suicide at his inability to pronounce nasalized vowels. Avery's better self would have surfaced to the point where he offered to shake hands with Bilbo, which would certainly have led to bloodshed. Anne Bonny and Blood would have sought solace together in the rhododendrons, and Rackham would have caught them at it. Oh, and the pirate crews would have mutinied, and this story would have had a different ending, and ye may lay to that. Fortunately, before any of these things could happen, the Spaniards attacked. They always do, and it is arguable that they are acting not out of sheer badness, but from Castilian courtesy. Let the hero be facing sticky death, the heroine fleeing from a maddened ravisher, the cad on the point of telling all, the spy on the brink of discovery, the lovers about to quarrel, the mortgage to fall due, or the party to freeze over. And here they come, guns ablaze, banners streaming, trumpets blaring, and mustachios a-twirl, the dear old opportune dons doing their stuff again, and everyone can forget their problems and pile in against the obliging common enemy. It happened now, just as Anne Bonny was moodily viewing the piles of untasted canapés on the buffet and wondering if she could unload them on her plantation slaves for supper. A thunderous boom of broadsides shattered the sultry afternoon. Avery dropped his putter. Bilbo did a startled belly flop from the top board. Happy Dan awoke with a shriek of, "Nous sommes betrayed, les voleurs sont sur nous!" Firebeard bit clean through his roasted ox. Rackham stroked shaven chin thoughtfully. Blood dived under the daybed, and Anne Bonny sighed contentedly. Broadsides invariably meant visitors, so the canapés wouldn't be wasted after all. And who should the visitor be, by the powers, but Don Toro Molinos, whom we last saw knocking big holes in the Brotherhood stronghold of Tortuga? Flown with victory, he had been cruising down to join Don Lardo at Octopus Rock when he had learned that the fugitive Rackham and two other pirate ships were heading for Roatan. Don Toro got this news, of course, from a half-caste fruit vendor in a bumboat. As all students of romance know, they were the only reliable sources of information on the Spanish Main, and fleets of bumboats were specially maintained, manned by trained fruit vendors who had passed stiff examinations, like London taxi drivers. So Don Toro had turned aside for Roatan to wipe up this last remnant of the buccaneers, and here he was, strutting his gilded poop and quaffing charneco. What time his squadron swooped in like gulls to pound Roatan's forts to rubble, and his troops piled into boats, all hot for the loot of waterfront boutiques and delicatessens. And on nearby Shark Island, the buccaneer crews took swift action in the face of this sudden menace. One mad rush, and they were aboard their three vessels parked in the strait, cutting cables, casting off, setting sails, towels, pillowcases, anything that might catch the wind, and roaring for their captains to get moving in God's name afore the Spaniards noticed them. Their cries for leadership met with a mixed response. On the croquet lawn, Bilbo was blasphemously trying to haul on his satin breeches without having dried his legs properly. Yee! Happy Dan was going glassy-eyed, trying to say "on in" through his nose. Those nasalized vowels were really getting to him. And Firebeard was held up because, intent on clamping a cutlass twixt his teeth, he couldn't remember whether the sharp side went outermost or not. Two cool heads there were, fortunately, and Bonny calmly bade the servants place clean damp cloths over the canapés and refill the ice buckets, and Calico Jack, having calculated that it must take the Spaniards a good hour to force Shark Island straight from the north, saw that there was just time for his ships to slip out by the southern end, but only if Happy Dan Pugh could be rendered fit for duty without delay. This was vital, d'ye see, for while the buccaneers were never short of leaders of the Firebeard school, able to shout, "Up and under!" and charge headfirst through brick walls, they were always short of skilled seamen, and apart from Rackham and Bilbo, Happy Dan was the only captain present who could really handle a ship. When he was half sane, that is, out to lunch, as he now plainly was, he wasn't fit to pole a punt, and with three ships, one of them jury-rigged, to maneuver out of that narrow channel, Rackham foresaw catastrophe. He ordered immediate emergency treatment for the wandered frog, and while Goliath plied smelling salts and the little Welshman sang the ash grove in a vain attempt to charm the bugs out of Pew's steeple, Rackham, Firebeard, and Bilbo held urgent conclave, closely watched by Avery, his brain zipping like a computer in overdrive. Presently he sauntered up casually, lip a curl and eyes glowing with contemptuous voltage.
"So you'll run, Master Rackham," quoth he lightly. "British seamen will abandon their friends to hell or Spanish sack, huh?"
And he gestured airily towards Roatan, inadvertently burying his finger in the ear-hole of Colonel Blood, an anxious bystander. Rackham eyed him full grim.
"They ain't our friends. Roatan's a free port, paying 48% to shareholders who make their profit flogging our stolen goods and charging harbor dues that'd fright the Grand Cham. That," he jerked a thumb towards the gunfire, "is the risk they run."
"But ye ha' our good leave to die in its defense, bully," mocked Bilbo,
and Firebeard raised two fingers and raspberried resoundingly.
"Unless," Rackham's eyes glinted with sudden thought, "ye prefer to sail along of us as signed member of the Brotherhood."
"I'd sooner join the Maltese police force," Avery freed his finger with a glugging noise. "But since you won't fight, I've no choice but to sail with you on a fair-paying basis, understand? For yon Spanish onslaught is but foretaste of Don Lardo's design to sweep all non-Dagos from the Caribbean, and I must bear speedy warning to Port Royal." "Saha!"
Rackham's shaven chin took another thoughtful fingering.
"So that's why he drove us from Tortuga. Aye, but why should we risk our necks seeing you to Port Royal? The King's colonies is no pals of ours."
"Indeed, bully,"
Bilbo snuffed jauntily, trying not to wriggle in his wet pants.
"Shall we mourn if Lardo doth plunder fat Bristol planters and set merry torch to their sugar cane? We owe not to them or to thee," he added, meaning it to sting the cad.
"Ay, burn 'em all. They'm honest men," bawled Firebeard. "Good luck to lousy Lardo, says I, wi' a warnin' and belike, and yah, to thee, dandy prat."
Avery quivered with disgust.
"You cads! Nay, can rotters be so utter? Faw and char! I mean, I know you're bally pirates, but these are English settlements. Is that not to thee, England? The old flag, free speech, honey still for tea, carol singing in the snow, little girls gathering primroses?"
"Guinness," put in Blood helpfully. "Meat pies, brothels."
"Exactly. Will you shut up, Blood? Look here, Rackham. Can you stand idly by while Lardo wrecks red ruin on all decent chaps?"
"Decent chaps as builds gallows for us," said Calico Jack.
"But belay that, King's man. For if ye did get warning to Port Royal, 'twould do naught to pinch a good. There's but two leaky men-o'-war in Kingston Bay, a half-regiment of invalids at Spanish Town, maybe a frigate at St. Kitts, and no other help nearer than Port of Spain or Providence. They'll not save the settlements if Lardo sails, and ye may lay to that." "What?" Avery incredulied. "I'll not believe it. No cover? Nay, 'tis not possible."
"Ask the fruit vendors," jeered Bilbo. "They'll tell thee. Why do ye gape, man? Wherefore should the king keep costly ships to guard his western outposts, when we of the Brotherhood have ever been stout bulwark against the greed of Spain? 'Tis not fear the navy has kept Lardo and like wolves from the throats of your Jamaicas and Carolinas. 'Tis that we, the buccaneers, had kept the Spaniard his hands full this many a year."
"Say it again, with 3 times 3 and a curse," bellowed Firebeard. "I ween the boys, by thunder."
"And now we're broke. First at Tortuga, now at Roatan.
Rackham shaded his eyes and looked north where the Roatan forts were burning. "So farewell and adieu to the Americas for us, and God help your honest folk, Ben Avery." It shook even Blood, callous ruffian though he was. Perhaps he remembered Cohockle Guzlin and tales of other Spanish devilry. But it acted on Avery like shot of benzedrine. It was just what he had been needing for weeks. A hopeless cause, insurmountable odds, a sudden blazing inspiration, and a heaven-sent chance to start ordering everybody about. This, he realized, was hero time. His shirt ruffles blossomed at the prospect. "Farewell and adieu, ha! Huh? Don't make me laugh. Why, as ye stand, ye're in no case even to clear this island. I scowl, villains! Ye've a French skipper yonder who's in the land of Nod, and like to stay there. So ye need a commander, a proven sailorly skill, address, and character, able to hand, reef, steer, lay a course, fight a ship, quell a mutiny, keep a log in legible handwriting, and see that the sharp end's pointing the right way at night. I even speak their beastly language," he admitted frankly. "In fine, you need me if you want to get the frantic frog out of that channel before the dons are in among you." Rackham, who had already reached this conclusion, took another scratch at his chin, glanced toward burning Roatan, watched as Goliath helped Happy Dan into a canvas jacket, considered the plight of the frantic frog with her alien crew wrangling hysterically about whose turn it was to go aloft, and didn't even bother to argue. "We could abandon her," he said slowly. "But suppose ye conned her out for us. What's your price?" "Bilbo," said Avery coolly, "you seem to be well in with the fruit vendors. What ships doth Lardo dispose at Octopus Rock?" Startled, Bilbo went all slit-eyed. "Say 15, huh? Tall ships of war, a round score when Don Toro joins him." "But if before then," cried Avery, his profile a-quiver with daring do, "three stout ships, well handled and packed with reckless fighting men, were to fall all unsuspected on Lardo, they could so maul his fleet, it would be in no case to harry the settlements for ages." "And where do you get three stout ships, well handled and packed with reckless fighting loonies, as if I can't guess?" Rackham gestured angrily at the strait, where the pirate crews were beating the sides with pannikins and singing, "Why are we waiting?" with mounting urgency. "That's your price, huh? We'm to fight for you at Octopus Rock," he rasped, and Avery nodded serenely. Bilbo gaped and smote his forehead in scornful amaze. Firebeard, when Avery's proposal had percolated, collapsed in helpless mirth, waving his hairy legs in the air and hooting. Rackham eyed our hero with grim amusement. "Either you're moonstruck," he growled, "or you've a rum idea of bargain. For your mere 2 hours' pilotage, ye expect us to hazard our ships and necks against odds of 5 to 1 and worse. Now tell me, quiet-like, Long Ben, why should we, ha?" "Fair question," approved Avery, "and I'll deal with it in a moment. But first, ask yourselves, why shouldn't you? I mean, what else have you got on offer? You admit your brotherhood's kaput. You're out of a job. You're on your uppers. You can wander like Vanderdecken till someone hunts you down and strings you up." "The world's wide, bully," snarled Bilbo. "We're gentlemen of fortune, and take our chance, dammy. There's other oceans." "And better places for a funeral than Octopus Rock," said Rackham. But his glance at Avery was speculative and wary. "Funeral?" Avery was amused. "With me in charge? What funeral should there be but Spanish ones?"
"Oh, get knotted!" cried Bilbo, out of all patience. "To hear such braggart clack from you that but 2 hours ago stood muling with a noose about your neck."
"I'm still waitin' to hear," said Rackham quietly.
what's in it for us, Long Ben?
Well, it would be a jolly good thing to have done for a start, said Avery warmly. But if it's rewards you're after, he paused impressively, I can promise you the tops, the big one. Wait for it. Free royal pardon for all.
Their hoots and oaths drowned him out. Firebeard begged him to stop before he, Firebeard, did himself a mischief. Even Rackham waxed derisive, but still with a thoughtful glint in his eye.
You're sure you could guarantee it? Maybe we's past pardon.
There's a man at my elbow who once stole the king's crown, cried Avery. If he can get a pardon and a royal handshake, anyone can.
Oh, just hold on a minute, protested Blood. I'd have you know.
Much good it's done him, too, scoffed Bilbo. Look at him.
Pardon's the least of it, don't you see? Cried Avery. What, for the men who'll have saved the Indies? Morgan got knighted for less than that.
He noticed Bilbo blink, suddenly thoughtful.
And look here, chaps. I knew the king, and my future wife draws gallons of water with the establishment. Her old man's an admiral, whom you've met, actually. Why, you'll be made men. I pledge my oath I'll get commands for you, Rackham, and you, Bilbo. For Firebeard, oh, gosh, we'll think of something, you'll see.
He paused.
And don't worry. I can take larder like a cup of tea, and you'll have saved your camarado Sheba at Octopus Rock.
Bilbo snarled and sneered, and Firebeard just lay there wheezing. But Rackham's shaven chin was rapidly developing grooves. Suddenly he kicked Firebeard upright, beckoned Bilbo, and the three went into a huddle. Fierce whispers and doubtful growls were heard, and once Firebeard roared,
"I don't trust him! He'll shop us to the Maltese police, didn't you hear?"
At last they broke up, Firebeard scratching uneasily, Bilbo pale and fierce-eyed, Rackham grim. He stood arms akimbo before Avery and looked him in the eye.
"Free pardon for all, including Sheba, and your best endeavors for our fortunes."
"I'll be damned," thought Blood, "for I don't believe it. Either I'm dreaming or roguery's changed since I was a lad, and yet, while he wouldn't have trusted Bilbo or Firebeard afoot, he couldn't see Calico Jack as a breaker of articles. Avery, of course, would trust anybody and gave his word on the spot. Rackham received nods from Bilbo and Firebeard, gave Avery another searching glance, and then held out his hand.
"Done," he said curtly, and glanced north again, where the cannonade on Roatan was slackening. "Best be away. The frantic frog's yours, Long Ben."
"Camarado?" While the others hastened down to the beach, Avery in the lead, shouting crisp commands in a perfect Sorbonne accent, Calico Jack strode up to the house to collect Anne Bonny, and was took flat aback, do you see, when she calmly informed him she wasn't coming.
"Darling, you know one cannot abide ocean travel these days, one simply can't. Reek of bilge and tar are for the young and active, and all that hearty yo-ho-hoing." She reclined wearily and selected a violet cream. "One just couldn't survive."
"And you'll survive here, with Spanish fiends afoot to pillage, burn, and rape?"
"They're hardly going to pillage or burn this charming mansion, darling, are they?" "No. One imagines Don Toro. That is the misconception out there, making all that noise, is not?" "Ay, well, Don Toro, being discriminating Hidalgo o Castile, will surely appoint this his personal quarters. Oswald's taking down the Brotherhood group pictures and that repulsive likeness of Lolonois. It will have King Philip, his portrait, in the hall, the Pope in the drawing-room, and that gold crucifix we looted from La Haja.
But thyself, mad wench, hast thou thought of thy fate at the hands of these pitiless ravishers?"
"Well, actually," smiled Mistress Bonny dreamily, "yes. Come, darling, if you were Don Toro, striding in here all booted and dusty, after a hard day's sack, in need of refreshment and relaxation, well?" She stretched and pouted wantonly. "You wouldn't cast one out to the common herd, would you now? After all, someone's got to sit at the other end of the dining table, and that sort of thing."
"But you and me, Annie lass, it's been 20 year together, fair and foul, and there be other islands farther on."
"And the brotherhoods broke at last, Calico lad, and each must look to his own fortune in his own way." She smiled up at him and sighed, and held out a soft white hand. "We'll go no more a-roving, Jack. I'm home from sea, and too plumply idle to stir forth again, or to be carried off," she added as he took a step towards the couch. "Nay, all courses part to westward. So kiss me, sweetheart, and let me hear ye laugh as ye go."
There was a long silence, while the big man, all in white, looked down at her, and remembered, and took her hand, smiling a little sad. "A long time since ye called yourself me and I," he said softly, and stooped to kiss her and stroke the dark red hair. "A long time since we broke the boom at Providence and stood out for Caicos Bank," she whispered, and kissed him again.
"And you're sure you can deal with the Dons?"
Mistress Bonnie chuckled, purring.
"When could one not?"
He went, laughing, calling back, "Adios, bella camarado," and so they parted as lightly as they had met so long ago. For a few moments she lay pensive, and at last heaved a little sigh and summoned her butler and maid. "Olives and sweet candies of Peru in dainty silver dishes, Oswald, and a decanter of Madeira with the Murano cups, likewise candles of scented wax, such as the Romish churches use. So shall our Spanish guest feel at ease." She waved languid dismissal.
"Hebe, lay out the green brocade." "La, wench, to be sure 'tis too tight. That's the purpose on it." "Ah, yes, and a small stiletto for one's garter, in case one is expected to play hard to get. Those macho dagos do so love to think they're taking one by storm. Hi-ho!"
And settling back contentedly on her couch, Mistress Anne reached for another violet cream.
"If only the guzzling nympho doesn't overdo the chalks, she could keep Don Toro dallying till the weekend, which wouldn't do our Ben and the boys any harm when it comes to the big showdown. You always knew they were going to get together, didn't you? Of course we did, says you. Aye, but can Avery trust the blighters, says I. If it comes to that, can the blighters trust Avery? Oh, come on, really. What a question at this stage of the story. Can you see our hero doing Bilbo out of a knighthood? More to the point, will his scratch force stand a prayer against the vast might of Lardo? Can he snatch Vanity, Mellifluous, and Sheba unscathed from the Viceroy's loathsome clutches? Incidentally, where the hell is Vladimir? Did he catch the sloop shuttle out of Roatan before the Dons attacked? What of... But we'll soon know, for here it comes with a curse, the answer to all questions, the payment to all scores, as we lay aloft, wear round, fall over, stagger up, and plunge manfully into...